Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Kate Genovese, and we're going to be talking about her book, Hat Tricks from Heaven, the story of an athlete in his own prison of addiction. A golden boy grows up in a loving family, surrounded by friends, effortlessly sailing through high school, college, and a promotions career. What could be wrong? Along with being the captain of a hockey team came six surgeries for sports-related injuries that resulted in an escalating opioid addiction. Besides this, there was a dark secret from his past that was lurking, waiting to see the light of day. In this incredible story of a woman's roller coaster ride as she moves from the nonstop joy of mothering to the realization that her son has become a participant in a deadly epidemic. Hat Tricks from Heaven is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to the book there in the show page description, as well as from other bookstores. You can, if they don't have it in stock, you can have them order it for you. You can also find out more information by visiting Kate's website, which is KateGeneviseBooks.com, and I have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So that, I'd like to welcome Kate to the show. Good afternoon, Kate.
Hi, Robin. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm doing well.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, this topic is just such a big thing right now. I mean, this is something that's just real important. And it was interesting. I noticed sometimes that whenever I have a show, certain things will kind of pop up that support how important it is. And this morning when I was watching the news, there was just a recent report out that the life expectancy in the U.S. ticked down because of the opioid crisis, that 63,000 people died of an overdose last year. And two-thirds of those were due to opiate overdoses. So, I mean, we're going in the wrong direction when it comes to life expectancy.
Absolutely.
And it's just sad. So, but now this obviously is a very personal story. So can you tell us why you wrote the book? What inspired you to put this out there for everyone to get a glimpse into your personal life?
Yeah, well, good question. My son Gino, his real name is Christopher John Genovese, but all his friends call him Gino, so that name kind of stuck with him. And he became a drug addict. He got addicted to opioids after having six surgeries for hockey-related illnesses and football. So he had used, and rightly so, he was in pain, so he did need the medications. And when he got out of college, he didn't have any reason to use medications. He wasn't playing sports anymore. And long story short, he just kept using them and using them, and eventually he, from Percocets, moved on to heroin and other drugs. And a year and a half ago, he overdosed Memorial weekend. And it was so sad. He had gotten introduced to fentanyl and heroin while he was in jail. He had to do jail time for a month, and that's when he got introduced to it. So he died on May 28th, and you know, there was lots of people at the wake, and I'm thinking, you know, some of these kids I know are drug addicts. Most of them are not. I hate seeing this happen. So I was heartbroken. My husband and I were just heartbroken to my other two kids. So I am not a type of person who can sit around and just do nothing, just wallow in my sadness. That's not who I am. So I had joined a grief group, and they had us write. We said journaling is very important. So I started to journal. I just started jotting down different things, how I felt, what I could have done differently for Gino to help him stay alive. But the book actually turned into the memoir, actually just writing things down, just turned into a book.
Yeah.
And I got the name Hat Tricks from Heaven because of hat tricks, as most people know, are what hockey players get when they get three goals in a game, and it's called hat tricks. So Gino had gotten many in his hockey career, and I figured he got to be in heaven, so I said hat tricks from heaven.
That's the perfect title. I mean, you know, it really kind of gets to the heart of the matter, you know, of exactly really who Gino was, and you know, and then the subtitle is the story of an athlete in his own prison of addiction. I mean, you know, that for many people who are in that cycle, it is a prison that's kind of hard to break out of.
Absolutely. It was a prison for him. He just couldn't break away from the people he was with. He had this monkey on his back he just couldn't get rid of. So I decided to write the book, and I started it as my husband and I met in 1969. I just give a brief history of Gary and I, my husband, and we had two prior children to Gino. And from there, I go on to his birth, and I just went by each year. And it was very, very sad doing it because we had so many good times, and he was a great kid. He was, you know, never really got into much trouble. If it was it was minor things, nothing big. And he was well-loved. He was very popular. He was the last person we would thought would have gotten addicted. But he was predisposed to it. Addiction runs in my family. There's many alcoholics in my family. Prior to this, we had a nephew. My nephew, Casey, died of an overdose when he was 23. So, you know, Gino knew this. He knew this, and even knowing this, he got addicted. And no matter what he did, no matter what we did, we couldn't get him off it, and he couldn't get himself off it. We tried, and he just didn't want to give up his lifestyle. He thought that he could still work. He had a very, you know, high-maintenance job in sales, and he had his own car. And he just thought he could do drugs once in a while, like once a month. And that once a month became twice a month, and then three times a month, and daily. And my husband and I didn't know because he was out of the house. He was living in Worcester, Massachusetts, where he had gone to college. And we had no idea that he was that involved in it. And finally, about a year and a half before his death, his friend from college called us up to tell us that Gino indeed was addicted to drugs, as was this kid that called us. And he was doing that because, excuse me, he was going to California to get himself straightened out. And Gino had stolen money from him and wanted it back. So we contacted Gino, and He admitted to it. So he admitted to it, and that's where we thought the story of healing would begin. Then and there.
Wow.
But,
I was going to say one of the things that you know, let's kind of start with the six surgeries for the sports related injuries. At what point in his schooling did those injuries occur? I mean, was it high school, college, mixture?
Yeah, it was high school. He was playing
okay.
in a private school in high school, and he was playing hockey along with football. And so it was initially it was a football injury, a knee injury, and it was minor. But then the next year he got a shoulder injury, which is very painful. He ended up having two shoulder surgeries. And with the second one, he had come home for the weekend. As I said, he lived away. So he had come home for the weekend, and he asked me to stop off at his doctor's office to get another prescription. He had been about 4 weeks post-operative. And I said, Gino, you should not be taking any more of those Percocets. You know, you should be on Motrin, you know, like a high dose of Motrin or something. You're going to get addicted. You know, it runs in the family. And he said, Mom, you don't know how painful it is. And, you know, he was a big con artist, really. It wasn't as painful as he was saying. So I dropped him off at school, but I told the school nurse there. And so she was on top of it, and she had to administer the Percocets. But I also called his surgeon when I got home, and I told him the story. You know, I'm a nurse as well. And I said, I don't believe Gino needed another prescription. This was the third one he was getting, and he's in his fourth week of post-op. And so he just read me the Riot Act. He said, you don't know how painful shoulder surgery is. And I said, addiction runs in my family. I was concerned. And he said, Gino is not an addict. And you have to stop being a helicopter mother. That's exactly what he said to me.
So, who was this that said that to you?
His surgeon. His surgeon.
Oh, my God. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, I was kind of put back. I didn't say anything to him, like, well, no, I'm not, and I've never been one. I was intimidated, to be honest with you, by him. So
yeah.
I said, all right, well, let me just see. I'll just keep an eye on it. So he eventually got off him, and nothing else was said about it. Then he had two more surgeries after that, but with a different surgeon. But yeah, he still needed him. He still tried to get extras, and this doctor, new doctor, would not give him extras. But he got it in his system. He got it in his mind. His brain was still craving these pills. He told me that when he admitted to his addiction, he told me that every time he'd go on the ice, he'd have to pop one or two Percocets and just to get through the period. His shoulder would pop out, like just pop out of his socket. And he had to have one of his friends shove it back into the socket so he could get out and play again. And that was craziness. I could see them doing it. And I talked to my husband about it, and he said, no, I don't think that happened. I think that you were imagining it. That's how my husband is in denial. He wanted him to play hockey so bad. He just, you know, athletes get injured. Look at athletes today. They get injured. They take drugs. They get back on the field. They get back on the ice. And that is true. That does happen. So I said, well, maybe I'm making a big deal of it. I'm not an athlete. So I'm not quite sure what to do at this point. So finally, college ended, and I thought using drugs ended. But as I told you, it didn't end, and he ended up getting in all sorts of trouble with the law. He ended up jailed for a month. And prior to that, we tried to get him into a detox and then a rehab. But every time I mentioned it, he would take off. He would leave our house and just take off. He'd sleep in his car or stay at a friend's. He wanted nothing to do with rehab. Then he lost his license and his job. He lost his girlfriend that he probably would have married if he had stayed straight, if he wasn't sick with the disease, but none of that happened. So he did come and stay with us. And it was just hard to see somebody live with a disease, and with any disease. You know, somebody has cancer, that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
somebody
yeah.
has any disease is difficult, but with addiction, I'd say it's even harder because it's a real family disease because we all get caught up in it.
The opioid, as far as addictions, I mean, obviously it's highly addictive, and it's interesting, that when, it's interesting, first of all, that the surgeon would take a stance that, calling you a helicopter mom. I mean, was that surgeon connected to the school? Because it seems to me that maybe the focus was more on the athlete than the boy.
Well, he wasn't associated with the school he went to, but he was associated with a large medical center north of Boston. And I think he actually saw Chris / Gino had a chance at playing in the NHL, and I think he wanted to see him succeed at that. And part of me does believe that he was a good surgeon, and he was very egotistical. And who was I to say he was giving him too much medication? Yeah. So, I get mad at myself when I think that I didn't report him. You know, I could have reported him to the Board of Registration and Surgery, but I didn't.
Yeah. We know the...
It wasn't me.
It seems that, when confronting someone in, in a position of power or someone who, is an authority in a particular area, like the surgeon, that it can be sometimes... intimidating in the sense that, obviously you don't know anything about surgery, but you know your son, and you know your family history.
Right.
And so, I mean, it just seems that, one of the important things, it seems from your story is for parents to recognize that it's so important for them to be the advocate for their child's health, to actually stand up and fight for their child's health.
Oh, absolutely. And I was a school nurse for 6 years, and I could pick out the kids that were high risk. I could really just pick them out, the ones that will probably get in trouble someday if they don't get help. And it's funny because I could pick them out, but I couldn't pick it out with my own son. And I think it was just because I just didn't see it in him. He was a good manipulator, and he would tell me what I wanted to hear, basically.
Yeah.
So I fell for it. But one of the things that did happen to him that also led to an increase in his drug use was when he was in ninth grade, maybe going into 10th, I'm not quite sure of that. But his English teacher had asked them to write a story of something that had happened over the summer, any story at all, just get them writing. And so Gino wrote the story of a family, and the three kids had gotten sexually abused. And so the teacher didn't know what to make of it, but he thought he better call me. So I talked to Gino about it, and our two kids, our other two kids, had been abused by my brother Barry, and he had gone to jail for it. We had pressed charges, and he was in jail. So we finally got out of Chris, Gino, that he was abused as well. He just was not telling us. He was holding it in. So that's why he was so insistent on playing hockey, because it was in other sports, because it would get his anger out, just the frustration of it all. And so once we found all that out, we got him counseling for 2 years, and he seemed to straighten out a little bit, but the addiction was still there. The addiction was still hiding in the background, and he couldn't get off it.
Well, it's good that the teachers, you know, recognized, you know, I mean, in the story, you know, and got to you to be able to, because, you know, having that held in and not addressed, I mean, that alone for many people leads to addiction. I mean, in a way of trying to deal with that emotional pain that they experienced.
Right, right. Exactly. There was a big write-up, and it might have been in your papers, too. It was the front page of the Boston Globe of this tremendous hockey player. His name was Gold, and his last name. And he was sexually abused by one of his coaches, and it just kept tearing at him and tearing at him. And he couldn't tell anybody because the coach threatened him. And so finally he found out he was abusing another kid and he couldn't stand it, so he finally let it out. And the coach was about to go to jail, and the kid killed himself. He overdosed.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
It was a very sad story. I think he overdosed in a, he was finally in a rehab or something. So the guy got off. You know, it just goes to show you how serious that is, too. The abuse.
Yes, exactly. Well, Kate, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to just take a break and do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask any questions, you can dial 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, you can feel free to post any questions that you have there. And then when we come back, Kate, I want to talk just a little bit more about your interactions, you know, because you mentioned that the school nurse had to, you know, give out the Percocet to Gino. But I want to talk a little bit more about the school, you know, and their reaction, you know, your experience with the school, and, you know, just for parents out there who think that maybe, you know, the school people have all the answers, maybe that's not true. So I want to talk a little bit about that when we come back, okay?
Okay, great.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store. Or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Kate Genovese, and we're talking about her book, Hat Tricks from Heaven, The Story of an Athlete in His Own Prison of Addiction. Again, the book is available from Amazon.com, and I have a direct link in the show page description to the book there, but it's also available at other bookstores, and if they don't have it in stock, you can always have them order it for you. You can also visit Kate's website for more information, and that's kategenovesebooks.com, and I do have a direct link to that as well. And this is a perfect gift for those who are affected by someone, a loved one in their life who is dealing with an opioid addiction, or any addiction for that matter. So with that, I'd like to welcome Kate back. Hey, Kate.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Great. Okay, so I just want to touch a little bit more on the school's, you know, reaction, you know, because you indicated that you let them know, you know, about your family history and in Gino's Percocet. So with the school nurse, I mean, were they, did they at any time tell you or exhibit any concern over misuse on his part?
Okay, that's a good question. First of all, we only told a limited amount of people concerns, and the school nurse knew, and the coaches were aware, and they were, this is in high school, and the coaches were aware that we had a concern about it. So they would monitor it as well the best they could. The school nurse held on to them, so he, during his, especially his junior and senior year, he had to go to her office in order to get them. But it was silent about the abuse. Nobody knew. It was his choice whether or not he wanted to tell any of his friends or any of his teachers. Only that one teacher knew, and the therapist that we had him see at the school, and then we got him a private therapist in town that he saw for 2 years. Because it's a very private thing, you know, it can be very embarrassing, sexual abuse, and we definitely didn't want to go around talking about it or it happening. One of the coaches did know, the football coach, because he was recognizing some emotional changes of Gino on the field. He would see him just kind of spacing out, like he wouldn't be doing what he was supposed to be doing in practice, kind of spacing out, looking up at the sky. And he confronted him and said, "Gino, what's going on with you?" So finally, when I found out, I told the coach what happened and what we were going on with in our family at the time. So he knew, but other than that, we respected his feelings and we kept quiet about it.
That's a tough one. I mean, you know, it's really, you know, especially in high school, you know, talking about sexual abuse and for boys is you know, it's just tough. I mean, you know, it's just certainly, I mean, sexuality isn't really, you know, spoken about. I mean, when abuse is talked about, it's usually the girls, you know, who are the ones that, where the antennas go up, you know, for that kind of thing,
right.
You know, and you know, there's, unfortunately with society, we still have this the stigma, you know, for guys, you know, that we can't talk about that. You know, it has to remain hidden, and we have to kind of, quote, man up, you know. I mean, it's sad,
yes.
You know, that we still have that.
Yeah, it's very sad. And on today's Boston Globe, Cardinal Law was, he just passed away, so all this was brought up again about
right.
The Catholic Church and how many people were, kids were abused. And so, you know, things like that, it triggers all over for kids that have been sexually abused.
Exactly. So now, I understand that at one particular point that you went to Al-Anon meetings. Is that correct?
I did. I started going to Al-Anon meetings in my 30s because my dad was an alcoholic, and I just realized that my life was feeling dysfunctional. I just was personally going for myself. I was feeling like out of sorts. What was the matter with me? I wasn't feeling like I was fitting in. And so a friend of mine at work mentioned to me that she was going to Al-Anon, and she explained it to me that it's a family program for the family of alcoholics or drug addicts, and why don't you come with me? So I went with her, and I felt like I really fit in. I really felt like I belonged someplace. I could talk about my problems. I could talk about my dad and how it was growing up, or how I could just get better and not think so badly of myself. So while I was going to Al-Anon, the information came up of my brother. That's another long story, so I'll keep it short, but of my brother Barry abusing my two older kids when they were small. It came out suddenly when my daughter was 16. She disclosed it, and we found out that my son had been. So we confronted my brother, and he admitted it, but he refused to get any help, and he was just like living on the street, and we didn't know if he was still abusing, so we had to press charges. Actually, we didn't have to. The school did, because they were mandatory reporters, and so they're the ones that reported it. So all during this time, Christopher was observing all this because he was only 9. So Gina was only 9 when all that was happening with his older siblings. So he had that in the back of his mind all the time. And I think just seeing his brother and sister like that affected him quite a bit. His brother was a really good athlete, really smart, and he saw him starting to go downhill. Fortunately, his story is a different story. He sobered up, and he's lives out of the country, but he's very healthy today. So that's, part of what happened with Gino, too.
Yeah, that's something. Now, you indicated, I think, that he had gone to prison for a month or so, and you said something about heroin and fentanyl.
Right.
Was that where he was introduced to it? In prison?
Yes. Yeah. He hadn't been using it. He was just using the pills. Now, this is what I was told. So, you got to remember, he may not have been telling me the whole truth, but I believe he was.
Yeah, true.
When this came to it, he went to jail for a month because he was driving under the influence. And he had been picked up by the police, but they always let him off or always just made him pay a fine. He was on probation. But this time was different. They kept him, and we said, this is it. This is it, Gino. You either going to stay in jail, or we're finding you a rehab that you can go to. And we found a rehab actually in Florida for him, and it was a working one, and we knew people that had been there with success. So we got a lawyer, we got it all arranged, and the judge declined it. He said he either has to stay in jail or go on home arrest. So we did not want him to stay in jail. I couldn't believe they would not let him go to a rehab. I mean, that's like sending somebody with cancer to jail.
Yeah.
So, really, I mean, what good was he going to get? What help was he going to get there? They have no help in jails, or they're just starting to here. So we took him home, and that was probably the worst mistake we ever made, because after 2 weeks, he got privileges. He had to go to a sheriff's office every day and have his urine taken, and he had to be take classes in addiction. But there also he met people that he I don't like to call him less than he was, but brought up differently than Gina was brought up. They were brought up like that, with tough families, and drugs were always in their lives, and so that's where he was turned on to the fentanyl and the heroin. And once the fentanyl came into being, he got so addicted, it was he didn't even know he'd have a chance.
Because
it's such a powerful drug.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing I think, you know, that is the source or the cause, you know, for the dramatic increases in overdoses is the introduction of fentanyl into the mix. It's just, you know, I just don't know. I mean, you know, with a judicial system that doesn't recognize, you know, addiction for what it is and how to, you know, properly address it, you know, jail is certainly not the answer, you know, and going back to the same environment that they were in is not the answer. So it seems that, you know, we, as a country, we need to really rethink, kind of shift our thinking when it comes to addictions and treatment.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm very angry at our legal system because, as I said, he was on probation for different things he had done. And so he would go against the probation. And so they'd have him go to court and they'd say, okay, just pay $300 and you can leave. That happened about five times. I asked him, I said, Gina, why you happen to do that? Why don't they do something like put you and get you some help? So I approached, he didn't want me to because now he's 29 years old and he doesn't want his mother taking care of his business. But too bad, now I'm finding out all this stuff. And so they ignored me kind of. They didn't know what to say. This is what we do. We don't find them places to go. But there is no beds in Massachusetts in the wintertime ever. It's hard to find a bed for a patient to go to. Just the way it is. But that's why we had to go out of the state and go to Florida to try to find him something.
Yeah.
And
that's crazy.
I thought it was crazy. I mean, I'm sure the judge has his own opinion, but and the probation officer, but they were just plain out and mean. Like, no, you're just staying in house arrest or in jail. So, I mean, I told them how I felt. I wrote them letters. I wrote the sheriff a letter with my dismay and how he died because of this. And I think that the people dealing these drugs, a lot of them are not using drugs themselves, and they should be incarcerated, I believe. Like, how do they get off of anything? Why shouldn't they go to jail? Why shouldn't they be up for manslaughter if they kill somebody?
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, it's really strange. One of my listeners, Jennifer, in the chat room indicated because they want the money. So, I mean, you know, a lot of it, you know, like when it came to the fines, you know, I mean, it was, you know, much easier to fine and release, you know, and if it happens again, fine and release, you know. You know, rather than, you know, really solve the problem. And you know, and I, like when you talk about the supplier, you know, being held accountable, you know, it's right where one of my family lives in upstate South Carolina, their next door neighbor is a known meth manufacturer and dealer. I mean, it is just widely known. And literally years of you know, transactions going on, you know, he got arrested, and then he was out within 24 hours and is back to doing the same thing. I'm just stunned, you know, that you know, it's allowed to continue, because I mean, I'm not sure about how much he's using, but he's certainly a distributor of it, you know, and the heartache that it's causing is just, you know, inexcusable.
I know, absolutely inexcusable. So I am, a lot of that is in my book. I'm hoping to make people aware of it, of our legal system, and also to help parents and kids such as Gino to maybe avoid the addiction if they think that they're high risk. You know, if they're honest with themselves, maybe they can talk to a school counselor about it. And as far as the parents go, my mistakes from the very beginning, I should have just looked in his room. I should have just searched in his room for things. They say, no, don't do that. You're breaking privacy. Well, too bad. I might have saved his life if I had found some paraphernalia in there. I really would have.
Being a little bit more intrusive, could save lives, you know, as well as, you know, the idea of, you know, tough love or, you know, of not being, you know, like always accommodating, you know, to the desires of someone who has an addiction.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like we just loved him too much. And my husband and I have to stay on the same page, as I put it. My husband and I didn't stay on the same page. I wanted to be tough love and get him out of the house, even if I have to drive him to a homeless shelter. And my husband Gary was, no, we don't do that. I didn't do that in my family growing up. You know, he's full-blooded Italian, and they just did not do that.
I know that.
My
grandparents are from Italy, so I know what that is all like. That's like, so, But, well, you know, and the one thing is you can never love them too much, you know, but it's just, you know, how you express the love and you know, sometimes, you know, sometimes loving someone means, you know, letting them go or changing, you know, being a little bit tougher or just, you know, being stronger for yourself, you know. Sometimes,
right.
You know, that,
right.
That's the expression of love. So, well, Kate, you know, this is, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today about Gino and about your book. You know, it's really important, and I think you're really doing a great service by, you know, allowing people to have a peek into what your experience was.
Well, if I can do anything for anybody, I would, to avoid this disease, this substance abuse disorder. That's what we say in Al-Anon now. We call it a substance abuse disorder. And that will look like when you're admitted to the hospital, that's what they should be saying. Not, he's an addict. There's a stigma to that. So it needs to be changed. That's what I think. So,
If we change our perception, you know, of the illness, you know, and recognize it for what it is and that it's a behavior and it's not the person, you know, that's not who the person is. It's just a behavior that they need to shift. Well, thank you again, Kate. I really appreciate
you. Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Okay,
I just wanted to give the website again.
Yes, yep. I was just about to do that. So, That's okay. Not a problem. We're going to make sure that people go to your website and also get the book, too, because it's a really important book. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Kate Genovese. We've been talking about her book, Hat Tricks from Heaven, The Story of an Athlete in His Own Prison of Addiction. Again, the book is available from Amazon.com, and I have a direct link to the book there in the show page description. And again, it's also available from other book distributors. If they don't have it in stock, just have them order it for you. And again, you can find out more by visiting Kate's website, which is kategenovesebooks.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website as well in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.